Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
It began with a few lines of a small ad in a newspaper spotted by our reporter Brian O'Connell, and it has turned into a story taking in the Korean War, a long sea journey home, a romance, and a startling revelation leading to a lifelong search. So Brian, we know you've been trawling the ads for years. This one, though, caught your eye.
Well, you do come across these ads from time to time where someone is looking for a person, and often they'll give a name of the person. Usually in my experience, Claire, if there's a contact number or an email, I'll often get in touch, and people are very slow to engage, and obviously that's very understandable because these are ads where someone is looking to reconnect with perhaps a lost love or maybe find a parent. So in this case, the ad I saw was fairly simple. It was looking for a named person born in the 1930s. And they said they were trying to trace them or members of their family, and then they gave a contact email. Now, some of the details we're going to withhold for obvious reasons, but it culminated in me speaking with the person behind the ad. This person is Mike. Mike lives in England, and he began by telling me the background to his search and how before his mom met the person who he thought was his father, she actually had had another relationship.
Basically, she'd been an au pair in Korea to an American officer during the late 50s. And obviously, as that conflict came to an end, everyone started to disperse. She was no longer needed as an au pair, so she sought passage back from Korea. She travelled back on a ship called the Canton. She struck up a relationship with a member of the crew, and that resulted in a romantic relationship. When they docked in Southampton, they went their separate ways because obviously he was obviously sailing back and she was going back home. Within a few weeks or so, she realised that she was pregnant. She met somebody at a local dance. They obviously had a bit of a fling, and she then announced to him that she was pregnant. Obviously, in those days, it was not a good thing to be pregnant and single for a young lady. So he, thinking he was the father, did what you did in those days and then married her. Obviously, it later transpired that he wasn't my father. Basically, about when I was about 20, I found out that the person I thought was my father wasn't. I've been trying to trace him all that time. Obviously, I started pre-internet days, which made it very difficult. He was actually contacting organisations by letter and such. I didn't have his full details. And also, he wasn't on my birth certificate, which meant I came up against privacy issues.
Gosh, an extraordinary story there from Mike. An understandable background, a different era, and obviously at some point the truth emerged.
Yes, I mean, he's not sure when his mom told her husband, but Mike was told some years later during a conversation following his parents' breakup. And I suppose from that point on, Claire, Mike has been trying to find out who his biological father was. Now, what he does know is that he's looking for someone possibly in their 80s now. They worked on this ship called the Canton. It operated between Southeast Asia and Southampton after the Korean War. He knows his father was born in the 1930s in County Cork. I asked him about that moment when he was told that his father wasn't actually his father.
It's very hard to explain. It literally came on the back of a conversation, almost like a physical tsunami of emotion went through me. I remember almost feeling dizzy, you know, almost falling over because physically felt like it went through my head and just washed away in an instant half of who I thought I was. The ironic thing was that I always got on better with my father's side of the family than I did with my mother's. So suddenly they weren't actually my family. You don't realise how much you base who you are on your family, your upbringing and those interactions that you grew up with. To suddenly have those all questioned or taken away, it's quite a traumatic thing. And I'm sure, you know, this probably happened to other people, but for me, it really did stun me.
And I gather your mum was reluctant, in a way, to go back into it.
She was aghast that I'd been told and said it didn't matter, it's all in the past. There was this sense of shame, embarrassment about the whole situation. Mm-hmm. And if I'm honest, at that time I was angry with her. Nobody would give me any further information at that time. And it took me a while. I had to gradually tease bits of information, particularly out of my mother. I said, well, just tell me his first name. Mm-hmm. So I got that. And then, maybe 6-9 months later, I sort of said, well, what was his second name again? So that's when I started on my research. How many ships were sailing from Southampton to the Far East at that time? I found out there were two. narrowed it down to one, and went on from there.
And lo and behold, there was a man with the name you'd been given on that ship, and you believe he came from County Cork originally.
Yes, it took me 20 years to establish that, because again, I couldn't get information, but then I was searching the National Archives and they release information every 50 years. And his name suddenly popped up. There was this person serving on that ship. It also had his seaman's crew card with a photograph of him at that age when he signed on in 57.
Do you believe that he was told of your existence?
Apparently, yeah, because later on I had a conversation with my mother, and she said that they had stayed in contact and she told him of the situation and he had offered to help. But by that time, she had obviously made other arrangements, we say. They decided to leave it at that. It's not a case of finding him to, you know, confront him or challenge him. It's just basically to try and fit in a few gaps in my life. You know, nice to know who he was, what he did.
So he's still trying to find him, Brian, but Mike said to you that he's not doing it anyway to confront him. He's not looking for anything. He just simply wants to find him.
And because he isn't a named relative, it's been very, very difficult. And I mean, it is likely, and he's aware of this, that his father may have died. He'd be well into his 80s if he was alive. Mike had planned to come to Cork this year, actually, before COVID intervened. And I suppose while it was painful learning this huge piece of information about himself, it did actually make a lot of things in his life make sense, including the fact, of course, that he's now half Irish.
It took a lot of time and effort, and it was, you know, very frustrating at times. I kept hitting brick walls and things. But the point where I found out his name, interestingly, I thought before looking at Cork that he may well have settled in Southampton, because that's where the ship was based.
It's an extraordinary story. So you took the opportunity of putting an ad in a newspaper. Has anyone replied besides me?
No, unfortunately not. I mean, it was a long shot. But the thing is as well, I mean, I've put it into the paper that you saw. I also put it into a local free paper as well, just to see if I get a response. Mm-hmm. So, you know, A, it's one if the right person sees it. And then also, I wouldn't expect, you know, a response the same day. They're going to have to go away and think about how they want to respond to it, if it is them, you know, whether they want to make contact or whether they, you know, want to leave that in the past. And I fully understand that. It would just be...
And it obviously had a huge impact on your life.
Indeed, yeah. You know, I've gone on, I've had children of my own. I've had a successful career in a branch of, say, the civil service. It's probably now more so my children are growing up. They're interested in their history.
So how did it feel knowing you were half Irish?
I'm quite proud, actually.
You get a good day out on St. Patrick's Day now.
But a few friends have commented that, you know, joking that I must have kissed the Blarney Stone at some point. So that's obviously the Irish genes coming forth there.
That's Mike. And I know we've given limited detail there, Brian, but it may have just sparked something in somebody. And if anyone can fill in the blanks for Mike, what can they do?
Well, I mean, if they get in touch with the show or get in touch with me directly, we're very happy to pass on any messages or emails if it strikes a chord with anybody listening.
And finally, Brian, we're going to stay with the small ads. What's this about you buying obscure 19th century letters during lockdown?
My 21-year-old self would be horrified. And I actually blame Charles Dickens. So bear with me. I'd read Claire Tomlin's fascinating biography of Charles Dickens, and Dickens had a couple of very close friends, maybe three or four, and one of them was a Cork artist called Daniel MacLeese. And some people might know his famous painting. It was The Marriage of Strongbow and Aoife, which is in the National Gallery in Dublin.
Yeah.
MacLeese did a lot of the early drawings in Charles Dickens' books. So anyway, I was quite interested in Daniel MacLeese, and I was having a nose online on eBay and to see what was available to buy of his. And I bought a letter for some reason, don't ask me why. It was less than €100. And then a couple of months back, I was looking again online and there was a second letter by Daniel MacLeese. This is the kind of letter where if you were looking for his autograph, you would have written to him. And he had a nice phrase in his reply where he said, "I enclose a specimen of my penmanship." So I think I bought that for €70 or something. I mean, it's not going to break the bank. What I was interested in here was the address. It was 4 Cheyne Walk in London. And that's an interesting address because George Eliot lived there also, and it's now owned by who? By one Michael Bloomberg, the former New York mayor. So for the right offer from Mikey, I might be willing to let it go.
Oh, he'll definitely want that. We'll get straight on to him. We'll get 100%. More than €100. Brian, thank you very much.